Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 in FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living. Our show is about examining human nature and how it influences the daily world of humankind.
Tonight we're going to talk about caring for your health. And this is not necessarily about health care. We'll leave that to the political pundits, and we might touch on that a little later in the show. But this is about taking personal responsibility for your health and your longevity, quality of life.
We expect health caregivers, doctors, and so on to basically fix things when we're sick. And in today's environment, and it has always been this way, that's kind of a dangerous attitude. You're putting your own life in the hands of someone who may not be perfect and may be distracted at the moment that you're with them.
And you are your best advocate. You need to take responsibility when you go to the doctor and formulate questions ahead of time. Make sure you have a good idea of what you expect coming out of there.
I have a few things here that we can talk about. Taking responsibility for your health management is more possible today than it's ever been with the internet and all the types of education that we can have. Some of the things you can do are to keep a healthcare log. Whenever you see the doctor or do anything related to your healthcare, keep a log of it. Get copies of all of your health records, as many of the lab tests as you can. Take your responsibility for your health management. Use your resources. If you're getting a new prescription of drugs, actually, the pharmacist is probably the best resource, not your physician. Your physician has a lot of different types of disease processes and things that they need to know, and they just can't know about all of the drugs. So ask questions. Use the internet. Question any new drugs that are ordered for you. Question your diagnosis. Make sure that they're listening to all of your complaints and have the right diagnosis. And if they offer a treatment, what kind of alternatives might there be that they're not talking about?
And in that logbook or that binder, put in there the date, what doctor you saw, why you went to him, and what he told you. If there was lab work or tests done, oftentimes they'll let you log in. I know the VA does, Kaiser does. They'll let you log in and get copies of those results. And put them in the binder.
And that's not as widespread as it will be yet, but check and see if the healthcare provider or clinic or whatever method that you use, see if they have something like that available to you. And once you and your provider, your physician, your nurse practitioner have come up with a healthcare plan that you agree with, do your part. If they say exercise, exercise. If you've agreed that this medication is going to work, take it. If you decide not to take a medication the doctor's ordered, you have that right 100%, but tell the physician or the nurse you're not going to take it so they are aware of it. If you go to an emergency room and they're assuming you take that medication, that could affect the other things that they do for you during that emergency when you may not be able to tell them.
And when you do get that pharmacy drug insert that comes in the package that tells you all about the warnings, read that. Sometimes you'll find that if you're allergic to something, that medication might activate that allergy response, and the only information you're going to get is on that little sheet of paper.
And they end up treating you for something that is actually just caused by the drug that you took.
And this is often the case. Your doctor can only help you based on his experience and what he's been exposed to. If you are unfortunately one of those patients that doesn't have the most common ailment that's going around, like the flu or something else, and you have a serious illness, chances are that you're going to have to be your own advocate and challenge them when they want to put you in that slot of, oh, it's just the flu or it's just the cold. Challenge them.
And revisit your prescriptions every visit if possible, but at least as often as possible. Take that health record around to all of your physicians, all of your caregivers, so they all know together what you're doing. Your primary physician under today's structure is actually supposed to be like a primary contractor. They are supposed to oversee your general health and coordinate all of your specialists. Most just aren't able and can't do a good job at that, so you have to take on that role of being your general contractor for your health care.
And every doctor has patients that might have a similar name to yours. And if they file a record, now it's on computer, and if she happens to pull up the wrong name and puts a prescription in on the wrong patient, you're not going to find that. No one's going to discover that till your next visit when they review with you, when you first go in the room, what prescription medication you're on and the doses you're on. You need to make sure you listen and acknowledge every single one of those that you're taking.
And Pat mentioned earlier being your own healthcare advocate. Healthcare advocacy has actually become a cottage industry under healthcare, where you can now find people who specialize, and not necessarily clinicians, who specialize in helping you manage your healthcare. For instance, you have an elderly parent who really is not capable of doing this because of some problem that they're having, and none of the kids have any time to do this for the mother or the father. So the kids can get together, come up with enough funds to pay a healthcare advocate to be there when they go to the doctor, be there when they go to the hospital, help them manage and watch their medications, help them do all the things we're talking about that they can't do for themselves. And again, it's an industry. There are people who specialize at being healthcare advocates.
And oftentimes when we get really ill, or if we've been ill for a long period of time, we cannot be our own advocate. And sometimes we need to take somebody with us to the doctor, a daughter, a relative, a friend. If you don't have that paid advocate, take that person with you, because you're not going to be all that cognizant of the questions you need to ask or to challenge the doctor, because you're just worn out. You're too exhausted from being ill. And oftentimes, you will miss out on critical information because you're just not acute at hearing at that time.
And if you are the patient and you do have your wits about you and you're able to be your own advocate, you need to use your resources. You know, people tend to rely on us clinicians to just basically save their lives. And all of us are imperfect people, and we could do great good or great harm by making a mistake. So do your homework. In today's world, I see a lot of elderly people who refuse to, quote unquote, learn the internet because they think it's new technology that's for those darn young people. And actually, anything you want to know about your healthcare condition is on the internet. And as a matter of fact, since you have a specific disease and your physician is dealing with many diseases for many people, you can become a better expert than your physician or your physician's assistant on your particular issue. And if you will listen to your body, do your research, you can manage your health care quite well, and you'll be a lot safer.
And you know your body better than anybody. If someone gives you a prescription or they give you something to do, and after a couple of weeks you are not feeling better, go back, challenge them, tell them this is not working. Don't be afraid to speak up. There, another resource that we don't think of, and even though we're not all couch potatoes, if you are that couch potato or you're home during the daytime, there are a lot of medical shows on television. There's Dr. Oz, there's The Doctors, there's Your Health Program. There's a lot of television programs that address conditions that might be current, but they also talk about other things, high blood pressure and these different kinds of things that we don't usually get a lot of knowledge of unless we seek it out.
When you listen to the radio, when you watch television, when you research on the internet, when you talk to your friends, all of those things have potential errors in them. However, if you do enough of that, you can sift through all the errors and you can come up with what makes sense in terms of your own illness or something that you're trying to fix. But you have to do the homework. If you don't do the homework and you rely on other people, if they make a mistake, that mistake could affect your life in a big way. So use your resources, but again, at the beginning of the show, we said, take responsibility for your own health, and that includes healthy behaviors, which we'll talk about more in more depth in the next segment.
And one of those things we have to be cognizant of is sometimes as women, we put others first. We are our kids' advocates. We go with our parents to the doctor, and we suppress our own inner voice that says something's the matter. We don't want to have it checked out. I know men are less likely to say and admit that they have a problem and they won't get checked out. But women by and far are the caregivers to others, and they always put others first. And they never really think about things like exercise and diet is not necessarily because you want to lose weight, but it helps you stay healthy. It is part of the overall lifestyle that gives you quality of life and longevity. We have two women in our family that are in their 90s. They've never been to a gym. They've never had a dance program or jazzercise or any yogas or any of that thing. But the one thing they have in common is they're always moving. They're always doing something. They've always done their own laundry, their own gardening. They're still in their 90s. They are still flexible enough to move, to get down on the floor and get back up. And that's because they do keep moving.
And couch potatoes do generally become about as flexible as a potato. And Pat's very right there. We had an earlier discussion off the air about substituting some of that for exercise. But I agree. If the more you move, the more flexible you will be, the better everything's going to work. People who don't move as much and maybe have sit-down jobs a lot, vigorous exercise could offset some of that. But get up and move around constantly. I think it does more, though, than just the physical. When you're constantly moving around, your environment's changing, it's healthier for your brain and for your attitude.
It's stimulating, and it goes back to that theory of use it or lose it. It's your brain as well as your body. You need to use those muscle groups. You need to be able to still have some flexibility as you age, despite whatever that age is.
And when you say use it or lose it, that applies to things that people don't think about. People usually think about physical exercise. But use it or lose it applies to your emotional health. Your ability to interact with other people, your ability to handle daily challenges. As you get older and wiser and able to control your environment better, sometimes you tend to avoid change because you can successfully do that. And therein lies disaster, because you need change and stimulation in your life. You need new things challenging you all the time.
And it's from, and again, your cell phone, your computer, you can play solitaire. You can play all these games that are available that don't need someone else. And they don't have to be this high-powered game that you think teenagers are playing. There's other stimulating mental games that are on your computer.
And that's right. I kind of disagree about the solitaire part. That's a trap that I fell into for a while. But there are stimulating things you can do. You know, get on the internet and look up things that you have no interest in and try to learn about them. If people tell me sometimes, well, I do crossword puzzles every day. The problem with that is you've been doing them every day. You're not doing something different. So instead of crossword puzzles, try, art evaluation or something that you're not really comfortable with. Don't do the things you're familiar with. Find things to change and stimulate your mind. That's what keeps it young.
And children, expose yourself to children. All ages of children are stimulating, and they teach you things when you least expect it. Some of the things they ask that are so candid will make you laugh, which is also good for you. Laughter is the best medicine. A joke, anything like that. The cartoons, those laughter a day type calendars. These are marvelous things to improve your health, believe it or not.
Definitely. The opinions of young kids can surprise you and shock you and definitely stimulate your mind. But again, anything that's new, do things as simple as a right-handed person starting to brush their teeth with their left hand or shave with their left hand. Or if you do use both hands for those activities, switch which side you're using the hand for. Do things, again, that are uncomfortable in a way, because those are what causes your mind, your brain, to lay down new neuron connections. You don't really make that many new brain cells, but you constantly are stimulating new connections, which keeps your brains young and lays down actual tissue.
And you're never too old to start. Don't think, I'm too old, I can't do that, I can't exercise, I can't. Eliminate the word I can't from your vocabulary and start thinking of I can. And you will find little things that you can do that you couldn't do before, if you just take things in small steps. And it might be a mental challenge, like I can't do that computer, and you have someone show you how to do it two or three times, and suddenly you realize, by golly, I can do it.
Exactly. And if you feel like you can't, use the phrase to yourself, I choose not to do as much as I need to do to make this happen, instead of saying can't. It's long and drawn out, but you know what it's doing? It's giving you the actual picture. You can do almost anything you want, but how badly do you really want to do it? Do you want to do the work?
And our show is called Examine Life on Purpose. We want you to examine what it is you're doing or not doing and what excuse you're using for not doing it.
That's absolutely right. I'm kind of harsh that way sometimes. I work with a lot of people who are overweight. And, you know, a lot of times people have bad knees because they're overweight. And then once they've reached that stage, they say, well, I can't exercise. I have bad knees. And I sometimes will, in one case, I asked a gentleman if he liked beans, which I happen to know that he did. And I told him, show me the kind of beans you like. And he got out these two gigantic cans of pork and beans. And I showed him how you can do curls with those. And I said, I want you to do that at least 4 to 6 times a day until your muscles burn in your arms.
Or that pile of whatever it is in your house that we all have that is a clutter or a mess. You know, resolve each day that I'm going to find a home for one of these things every day, a new item. And you will be surprised. That is challenging, not only mentally, but it is physically. You have to go and actually either make room for it, throw it away, put it somewhere. But it stimulates your mind, and it is a form of mental exercise.
So I guess the bottom line there is we kind of strayed a little bit from our first segment, which is about healthcare. And these are some things we'll get into a little more in the second half. But you need to be a partner in your healthcare. Your healthcare is not about you go to your physician, you have an illness, your physician fixes the illness, and you go home. It's about a partnership where both of you are working on an illness. He has some skills or she has some skills that you don't have. And you have some knowledge about your body and your life situation and many other things that your caregiver doesn't have. You need to be a team. And people need to stop being afraid to talk back to their clinician in a nice way, in a constructive way, and challenge what they tell you and make sure that whatever they come up with to do, you have bought into that. And once you've bought into it, you need to participate and do what you need to do to make your health happen.
And if you have a peculiar illness or maybe a problem physically and you think that you may be looking at surgery, investigate that on the internet. You will be surprised at what you can find out. You can even see a surgery live on the screen, on the internet, that's been performed possibly with something similar to you have. If you need knee surgery or something else, you can actually, even a hip replacement, you can actually watch a live surgery that has been done on the internet and know what to expect and what the doctor's talking about when he says, we're going to have surgery. It's not a big event to him. He does surgery every day, but it is a big event to you.
And you can even talk to people that you know. I work a lot with people with sleep apnea, and you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had someone with me, and I've tried time and again to get them to try this one type of an interface or something, and they kind of resist the idea, and then they'll come to me the next time I see them and say, oh, my friend Bob, you know what? He uses this great mask and he just loves it, and I'd really like to try that. And then I pull it out and say, you mean this one that I told you about a couple of weeks ago? Talk to the people that you know. They may know things about your disease process that neither of your physicians or nurses know about, but could be valid information.
And oftentimes, they either have a relative or a friend that may have gone through the surgical procedure that you're going to have, and they can get you in touch with them, and they can give you some insight as to what to expect after surgery, what kind of rehab might be necessary, and some of the questions that they wish they would have asked prior to surgery.
So the first segment, we've been talking about healthcare and healthcare management. We're going to take a break. It's been about 20 minutes. And on our second segment, we'll talk about some healthy activities and some lifestyle changes that you can make. This is KKRN Radio 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. Pat and I will take a short break and be back with you.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. a kiss the bill, a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen. Imagination will make that moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. A kiss to fill a dream on.
This is Examine Life on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. Today we are discussing caring for your health.
I'm Steve.
I'm Pat.
And our first segment was a real quick run over on just healthcare in general and the system and how you can partner up with your caregivers. And now we want to talk a little bit about things you can do to prevent bad health.
And one of the things I think we often forget is that farmers in the 1800s on the prairie, they didn't have doctors and drug companies. They didn't run and get a prescription. They did some simple, basic care. And one of them was, ironically, Epsom salts. Everything, any kind of injury or wound or swelling, they didn't have ice available, so they would put magnesium, which is Epsom salts. And ironically, your body absorbs that magnesium right out of the water. And it is still effective today, and we should think about that once in a while.
And people talk about farmers' health being you know, the fact that they had natural food right out of the ground. But, you know, they were also moving all the time. They had to work hard just to get food to the table. And there's a lot to be said for having to make your own food to survive. You know, we have life pretty easy today. So we can sit on a couch and eat pizza because we can call somebody. We don't even have to go out and buy and get the pizza. And those people moved all the time. If you wanted to go somewhere, you walked. If you wanted to go further, you had to saddle a horse or hitch up a wagon. There was a lot of reasons why people lived as long as they did back then. The average age, you know, might have been 40. But you have to think that that includes children who died young of things like pneumonia because we didn't have antibiotics, about people who died of diseases that we didn't know how to treat. But in general, their health was good because you didn't survive back then unless you had excellent health. And so a practical life limit of 40 is actually not too bad when you consider all of the things they had that fought against that.
and the half-a-day trip into town would often include buying basics like cod liver oil. How many shows did you see on television, or how many great-grandkids or great-grandparents have you heard talk about having to take cod liver oil for illnesses? They also used whiskey. That was an antiseptic. It would clean a wound as well as a painkiller. They used Murphy's oil soap or lye soap, so that it was a very intense type of cleaning.
Yeah, lye soap probably got you really clean.
That was for clothes.
Well, I mean, you made all soaps out of lye. It's just some were milder than others. People made their own soap. They made their own food. A lot of times made their own whiskey. And whether they made it or bought it, all of these things were scarce. And I think one of the problems we have today with our lifestyles is, again, the pizza can be called for with a telephone. The soap we can buy in so many different forms. The whiskey, you know, liquor stores are packed with it. Well, you know, they didn't have such easy access to all those things, so they didn't have to restrain themselves the way we should and could.
And we did things like wash our clothes, or we had 20 Mule Team Borax, okay, was what we used as a soap, per se, that wasn't a bar soap. And that is actually boron. And when you use it in your clothing, on your hands, your body absorbs that, and that's a nutrient that you need. We no longer do those kinds of things that we, you know, we take for granted that the soap we use is good for us, when in fact it may not be.
And when it comes to food, you know, the farmers ate healthy food. And nowadays we have all of the fast food and the candies and the pastries. And again, they're too readily available for us. But I've heard on different programs before, especially political programs, that food, you know, the wrong kind of food is just too readily available, and that good healthy food is too expensive. And I disagree with that heartily. Good healthy food takes preparation. By definition, it's healthier because it's not pre-prepared and all the preservatives and salts and things in it for flavor. So you actually have to come home or get up in the morning and prepare your meals mm-hmm. for the day. And Pat had some interesting suggestions about how preparing your meals can help in the social life of the family. But healthy food is not more expensive. It just doesn't feed all that instant gratification of fat and sugar. And it takes some preparation. But you know what? You need to prioritize. Take the time and prepare the proper food.
And if you have the time, you don't have the time, and you go to fast food, and you take it home, and then you wind up sitting on the sofa watching television, you could have used that sit on the sofa time to actually create that meal. And that can be a family type of thing. One child makes a salad, another slices bread for making garlic bread, someone else learns how to boil pasta. Whatever it is, it becomes a family social event. It strengthens the bonds of the family, and it also teaches the kids how to cook.
It's just a matter of prioritizing. We've lost a lot of living skills, I think, because of the advent of all of our technology. And our big infrastructure, which has made plenty for us. It's kind of sad that we have, in the world that we have today, we have a country where we have to be careful how much food we eat. And so, you know, take the time and eat healthier food and exercise. And again, prioritize your time. I don't care who you are. There are ways to do this. It's a matter of what you consider to be a greater priority. And when your health is bad and it's too late, I think we kind of deserve what we get.
If you're going to drive through the drive-through restaurant and eat in your car, you are actually defeating two purposes. One, you're not socializing with anybody. And two, you are not really paying attention to the calories you're consuming. If you go home and you cook a meal and you actually put it on a plate, and you have that each third of the plate has a protein, a vegetable, and possibly a starch, you're looking at what you're eating, and that's a balanced meal. And you're probably not going to overeat. You're probably not going to have excessive amounts of carbohydrate or excessive amounts of sugar, because it's right there on your plate and you're visibly seeing it, as opposed to a hamburger that's wrapped up in a bun and you really aren't paying attention to what you're eating.
Yeah, those foods are just too convenient. And they fulfill a basic need. You know, a biological organism has an imperative, if you allow it to take place, to basically consume as many calories as possible and expend as few calories as possible. And in the jungle, that's a survival strategy, but in our current society, it's not. It just turns you into an organism that's going to die at an early age and probably be miserable during a big part of that existence. So because we're in a society, we have to decide on what kind of health we want to have, and we need to make choices based on that. And I'm one of those people. I used to weigh 325 pounds. I'm one of those people that's much more comfortable sitting on the couch eating a pizza. But you know what? I'm a people, not an animal, and I have choices. And so every day it's my choice what I want to eat and how I want to conduct myself.
And let's talk about some of the things that will improve your quality of life and longevity. One of those things is eating colors. If you don't have any fruits or vegetables in your diet, you're not really feeding your immune system. The body has a fabulous system already designed to help you fight diseases and illnesses, and it's your immune system. And if you feed it, it will help promote your good health.
And actually, if your sugar intake or starch intake is even a little excessive, you are either temporarily, depending on the situation, or permanently destroying your immune system.
Yes, sugar is one of the things that turns off the immune system. But a couple of things to think about is, if you live alone, get a pet or socialize with friends on a regular basis. They've already proved that married people live longer, and that's part of that give and take in conversation and stimulation, that if you live alone, it's much easier to get depressed, and the longer you live alone, the more you become an introvert, and it can shorten your lifespan. Volunteer somewhere or join a book club, or you must have an interest or a hobby that you can somehow go out and socialize.
And one of the items that Pat had written down was deep breathing, and she talks about it before bedtime to change your blood alkalinity and relax you and reduce your stress. But, you know, a lot of people with the sedentary life that we live many times, our lungs only breathe as deeply as we need to maintain life. So you actually are doing yourself harm when you're sitting a lot. And taking a few deep breaths every now and then, especially if you're in a situation where you can't get up and move around, is very important. As a respiratory therapist, I can tell you that those type of activities have long-lasting effects on your health.
And it's easy to do. You can take a breath in through your nose and count to 15, and then exhale through your mouth, counting to 15. Repeat that 3 times, and you will feel enlivened. It is just wonderful. It gives you an oxygen kick because it's just your nose, your sinus cavity is so close to the brain, that membrane's very thin, and that oxygen penetrates your whole system.
And as a sleep specialist, as part of some of the things that I do, I want to talk a little bit about sleep. And I know it's been more in the news lately, but people need to understand sleep is essential to health. And the number of hours you sleep is only part of it. It's the quality of your sleep as well. And some quick things to remember about sleep. First of all, if you are suspected of having any kind of a sleep breathing disorder, sleep apnea, or even sleep hypoventilation, you need to get that treated. You need to get it assessed and diagnosed and treated. And it will change your life and add years to your life if, in fact, you have that problem. And a few quick things. If you haven't, the more active a day you have, both mentally and physically, the more likely you are to sleep well and get the proper amount of REM sleep. No television in the bedroom. No eating 2 hours before sleep. And bed is for 2 things. One of them is sleep. Anything other than those 2 things, you find other places to do those. And if you have trouble sleeping and you wake up in the middle of the night and you're tossing and turning, and I'm one of the people guilty of this who don't get up, you need to get up and walk around. And most people that do that report that then they're able to go back to bed and go to sleep. Get up and do something creative, or go do something that's been on your mind, or write about it or take care of it, and then go back to bed. I think we usually feel like we can't go back to sleep if we do that, but in fact, it works.
And Sleep is essential. Most people need 7 hours of sleep a night. Unless you've proven for decades that you can run on 4 or 5 hours, you're a unique person if you can. Most of us need a minimum of 7 hours of sleep.
And as a rule, unless you're very physiologically unique, if you've proven that you can run on 4 hours a night, what you've proven is that you can make yourself function on that, but you are, in fact, shortening your lifespan. And some of the diseases that will result from that, you will never be able to pinpoint, but they, in fact, will result from a chronic lack of sleep.
And exercise will make you sleep better. Even this deep breathing of inhaling to the count of 15 and exhaling to the count of 15, do it 3 or 4 times before you lie down to go to sleep. Not only does it help you sleep, but it reduces your stress level so you can sleep. It also alkalizes your body, and we'll talk a little later about the pH balance of your body. But these things affect your sleep, and they also affect other parts of your life. Simple things like digestion. Don't eat in bed, and drink lots of water before you go to bed so that you're hydrated overnight.
And Pat wanted to talk a little bit also about some research that she has about exercise, a combination of things such as I'm not a big believer in just walking for exercise. It needs to be vigorous walking, and it needs to be long and continuous. But she also has some research that she's read about how to supplement that with another activity style that can actually help you maintain a fat-burning metabolism.
There, you don't have to go to a gym in order to get the benefits of exercise. There's no sweat activity. Even gardening activates this. But there's something called non-exercise activity thermogenesis. And these are cells that support fat burning. And they release enzymes to do this breaking down of fat. And if you walk 30 minutes at least 3 times a week, and after that walk, every hour after that, if you do 5 minutes of activity, and that can be take out the trash, rotate the laundry from the washer dryer and then folding to loading the dishwasher to just making a trip upstairs, do something for 5 minutes every hour after you've taken that 30-minute walk, and your body will continue to burn at that thermogenesis level and burn off fat. It also helps the regulation of your blood sugar, so it increases your cell sensitivity to insulin, and that helps control insulin resistance, which eventually leads to diabetes. So having these cells work for you during that every hour after you've taken that walk is as beneficial as the guy that works out for 30 minutes at the gym and doesn't do anything else the rest of the day.
But I will say one thing about the workouts. First of all, go back to a point that Pat made about the women in the 90s living in her family. They were up and moving all the time. I will say that we stress aerobics, which is not a bad thing for exercise, but people who do want to exercise for health, especially as you get older, you need to look at weightlifting. And I don't mean, you know, power lifting or any of that. I'm talking about lean, low weight, repetitive weightlifting. The older you get, the more essential that is, because you lose muscle tissue, and muscle tissue is much more effective at maintaining a higher metabolism, mental health, flexibility. People over 50 don't focus enough on that kind of thing.
And you need to change your attitude about exercise. Don't call it exercise. Call it activity and look forward to it every day. Remind yourself that movement's going to increase my quality of life, my flexibility, my length of life, and look at it as movement, not necessarily as exercise, because that's almost a four-letter word. It's like diet. It's a terrible word.
Yeah, and willpower, too. Change the way you think about those things. You decide what kind of a life you want, and you foment that life instead of just doing something because you think it's your duty.
And willpower is overrated. There are things that you can do that will help your quality of life, and that's really what we're talking about. Things that are instant fixes where you need to have stress reduced and you need it right now. Posture can do this for you. It can reduce 50% of your stress in just 2 minutes if you have that power stance. And that's where you stand tall, your hands on your hips, and you breathe deeply for just 2 minutes. That will help reduce your stress tremendously. You don't have to take anything. It doesn't cost anything. You can do it in the bathroom all by yourself.
We're about ready for another break. I hope that some of these things have made an impression on you. But one thing that I need to say about this is we all need to quit whining about things. Whatever your health is, unless you're completely paralyzed, there are some types of exercise that you can do, and you need to do those. You need to never give up. You need to do what you can. And my journey for losing 100 pounds took 25 years. You need to do those kind of activities every day as much as you can. And if you fall off the wagon, you need to not beat yourself up about it. You need to just get back on the wagon and continue the healthy activities. Visualize the person you want to be, and you will be that person. But you have to do it every day, even if you think you're not making enough progress. You can't give up on yourself. And I think it's time for another break. On our next segment, we'll talk a little bit more about the healthcare system. And we'll be right back.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful.
It is a wonderful life, and you can find snippets of it on KKRN live shows, done by local volunteers and supported by you, our listeners and underwriters. You can contact our show at examinelife@kkrn.org, or if you want to financially support the radio station via underwriting for your company or by donation, call 530-337-1101.
I watch them grow, they learn much more than I ever knew, and I think to myself.
Where can you find live radio theater today? On KKRN, of course. Wicked Fell Radio airs weekly on Thursday evenings from 8 to 8:30, long enough to tell a good story and stimulate thoughtful conversation, short enough to get on with your evening. Wicked Fell by Bill Shockley.
Saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
You're listening to Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 FM on your dial in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. Tonight, Pat and I are examining healthcare, healthy lifestyles, and we'll continue with our third segment. We're going to finish up a few items that we wanted to cover before we get on to our final notes about the healthcare.
You don't need to make big dramatic changes, especially if you've been sedentary. You may just want to start with that 10-minute walk an evening and build up to a 30-minute walk. There are a lot of things that affect our lives that we don't even think about. One of them is 10% of our population, they say, are on antidepressants. And we take for granted that a pill is going to fix that, but that's not always the case. And sometimes you may be depressed and it's not really clinical depression. And a couple of things that you can do to snap you out of that is if you have an essential oil like a rose or rose oil or lavender oil, that can help you get past that moment of depression. Another couple of things that I found interesting is wiggling your toes and circling your feet like when you were a kid. You do that for 1 or 2 minutes, and it helps break up the brain waves with the production of alpha brain waves that calms us and releases some of that depression. And that's a fabulous, what are we going to call it, trick?
Well, I think a lot of depression today, I believe, is because our lives have lost a lot of their meaning. We tend to steer away from close family relationships. We don't look at helping one another. We don't have to struggle for our food. We don't have any reasons to be creative. Many of us just want a job that pays a certain minimum wage instead of going out and trying to make a difference in the world. And so we lose our meaning and our purpose. And I think a lot of depression could be fixed if we just made our lives mean more to us. Do something for someone else today. It feels good no matter what it is that you do or how large or small it is.
The other thing a lot of us suffer from is lack of energy. Everyone, I can't do that, or I don't want to do it. I'm just tired. I have no energy. A couple of quick tricks for that is place your index fingers on your earlobes and press and massage them for a minute. This is a acupuncture pressure point that kind of adds Eastern medicine to the Western way of handling medicine, but it helps generate energy for your body. The other thing is to press, lightly massage up and down in front of your ears. This is very sensitive to the nerves, and it signals the brain to release endorphins, much like when you exercise. These endorphins energize you. It's just a little trick to try. It doesn't cost you anything. It's just a matter of time.
I learned a trick once from one of the self-improvement tapes that I really don't think are that effective in most cases, but I tried it one day when I was having just a bad attitude. I was in my car, and the person on this tape said, just put a big smile on your face and watch what it does. And I did it because I do love to experiment. And first of all, you feel kind of ridiculous. So right away, the smile becomes genuine just because you feel ridiculous. And unless you're just determined to be angry that day, everything can change. It's like a feedback loop. Making you happy can make you smile. But making you smile can start you back on the path to some happiness.
Exactly. It's a cycle that you can perpetuate with all these little tricks that don't cost anything. It's just a couple of minutes of your day that you can invest in improving your own health.
It's part of the truth that your body and your mind are actually one unit. They're both closely interrelated. Your mind controls your body, and your body controls your mind. And there's a you somewhere that can manage both of them together.
And if you want to learn something new, learn how to meditate.
Yes, meditation is very important, and it can be much simpler than people make it out to be. Meditation can be a very simple practice, but it can give you a few moments of silence that can really refresh you.
I want to remind you of a couple of things that you probably don't want to do, and that's, I'm not talking about smoking and drinking, we all know about that, but a couple of things that you may not know about, and one of them is do not heat plastic of any kind in the microwave, or if you have something in your car that's in plastic and it gets left in this 100-degree weather, do not consume it. Those plastics, even though they say they're BPA safe, not all of them really are, and that is extremely detrimental to your health. That is a toxin your body does not know what to do with. And you know those love handles or that muffin top, that spare tire that we talk about? our brain is so, it's in charge of our chemical machine that we call our body. And that chemical plant is being regulated. And when the brain sees those toxins come into it, it goes, oh no, we're not letting that in the bloodstream. You take it out to those fat cells. And that spare tire you have around your middle is the storage of those toxins that your body doesn't know what to do with, and your brain doesn't want it coming anywhere near it.
All of the things that we're talking about tonight are based on the idea that we need to manage our own health. The reason that they came up with an Affordable Health Care Act, the reason that our medical system has been broke, is because we do not take personal responsibility for our health. Sure, there's a lot of fraud in healthcare, a lot of abuse in healthcare. However, it could not exist if people weren't so dependent on the healthcare system to fix the ills that they themselves bring upon themselves. We all need to participate. Healthcare costs would drop about 90% if we eliminated all of the third-party payers and if we eliminated all of the bad, healthy habits that people have. So each one of us is part of the problem.
Another thing you might want to consider eliminating from your diet, if at all possible, is high fructose corn syrup. It is one of the major toxins. GMOs, which are genetically modified organisms, but one of the main crops that has GMOs in it, and I know you've heard of that and how detrimental GMOs might be to you. But in corn, only 10% of the corn grown in the United States is actually for human consumption. The rest of it is for ethanol and animal feed. Unfortunately, high fructose corn syrup is a byproduct of the animal feed and ethanol cycle. So it's not intended for human consumption. They have just marketed it to us. They already know that it is a nerve and hormone disruptor. So do not eat high fructose corn syrup. And a little note, all commercial beer is made with high fructose corn syrup. I hate to bust your bubble, but maybe it's time you give up beer or drink the kind that's made in the local pub that's, what do they call those?
Draft?
Yeah, whatever those specialty beers are.
Oh, well, there's different names for all of those. Well, and everything you do, do it in moderation. I think that's one of the keys is just moderation in everything that you do generally leads to good results. There are a lot of new things coming on the horizon that can affect our healthcare, but if we don't take responsibility for our healthcare, they won't do us much good. You know, their machines are getting better and better at measuring every parameter of our body, and it won't be long that a machine can tell you exactly what your lab values are and then retrieve what needs to be done on a database on the internet. It sounds far-fetched and science fiction-y, but it in fact is the realm of databases and electronic devices to do these types of things, and you'll be in a lot more control of your health care. And there are many other things on the horizon as well.
Google has a new contact lens out that they're just come out with that they're getting FDA approval on that looks at the molecular level for biomarkers for obesity and linking disease to deficiencies. It's going to create a nutrient profile on the wearer. This is, you know, landmark type stuff.
And telemedicine is going to be bigger and bigger when, as the diagnostic equipment becomes better and better, your physician won't need to be so close to you and will still be able to do what they need to do. And again, if you're participating in your healthcare, you can fill in the gaps with any limitations that those kind of technologies may have. But you have to become educated in how to use all of these technologies. And you need to care about your health care. And you also, again, need to do the tough things like eating right, drinking right, exercise, meditation, you know, removing the stress from your life. Most stressors are not the problem. It's how we react. One person jumps off of a bridge with a bungee cord on, and they're frantic and their heart rate rises to 250 and their adrenaline pumps poisons into their system. Another person jumps off that bridge and the endorphins kick in and their heart rate slows and they're exhilarated. That proves that jumping off the bridge is not the stressor. It's how we react to the action that is the stressor.
And telemedicine is already available. It's kind of like having an at-home visit from a doctor. DoctorOnDemand.com is $40, and you can tap into a Skype doctor. There's other examples of this on the internet, Medicast.com. I believe even a couple of our local medical systems, the hospital, have something on demand where you can Skype into and talk to a doctor.
And we're going to see more and more of that. Your iPhone is or your smartphone is going to have more and more abilities to measure your vital signs and your lab values. I mean, the Xbox One that we have can read my heart rate through my clothes. The machines are becoming incredible, and they're going to be much better than diagnosticians at some point.
And they'll be able to help you create an exercise program. If you have a Wii at home, when you're closed in the middle of winter, you can activate that Wii and do something, play golf, tennis, anything with that machine. It's going to be a rehab device, you might say, for getting us back into activities.
Yes, those are becoming more and more sophisticated. And so I think part of the video game problem where kids sit around and become obese because they're sitting and watching all day, I think some of that may turn around. But for adults, we're going to have to make ourselves do those things. And they are incredible, and they're only going to get better. And you're just going to be motivated to do that exercise, but you still have to move. You have to turn that game on, and you have to get up and move. And there's times when you don't feel like doing it, and I'm guilty of that as much as anyone.
Or you could even get one of the new wristbands. It's called Smart Band by Sony, or the Fitbit, that actually has a behavior recognition sensor to monitor your activity, such as counting your steps. But that way you can gauge your improvement and get better and better at how in your own endurance.
We've only got about a minute left on our show. We hope you've been enjoying this program. We kind of jumped around a bit, but I know with myself, that's generally what I do. I think what we want to instill in everyone is the idea that you are responsible for your health care, not your physician, not anyone else. It's you. And the habits that you have are going to determine the health that you have to some degree. You don't have control over everything. But if everyone started practicing better lifestyles, then the people that need health care, there would be plenty of money to get them every bit of health care that they need. So please participate in your own health.
And just change one thing a month to improve your health. And over a whole year, you've made 12 changes and extended the lifelong.
This has been Examine Life on KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. We hope you'd enjoyed our show, and we'll talk to you again.